Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Becker on Darren Donick and Chase on this Thursday, a guy we've enjoyed talking with over the years. John Solomon used to be with CBS Sports, covered college football as a reporter for them. Now he is with Aspen Sports. The Aspen Institute is the website, and John Solomon is indeed on the line with us at John Solomon Aspen on Twitter. Recently wrote an article about USSSA and U Sports and the fight to try to come back during this pandemic. John, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, what was give us a little insight into this article. Obviously, the two of us on this show, our parents, our dads, have sons. They play baseball and have been involved in the travel world, understand U-Trip is what they call it, USSSA. U-Trip is a big outfit around the country. It's a big outfit here in the state of Tennessee. But kind of just give us kind of the backdrop behind this, where you talk about how much revenue they bring in annually, how much their CEO, and how they're trying to work around, COVID-19.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, I mean, travel sports for kids is a big industry. It's a very commercialized industry. Youth sports as a whole is estimated to be a $19 billion industry, and that's really just looking at the travel sports and some of the software platforms. So this time off for some of these travel sport organizers like USSSA has really been taken a financial hit. You know, they told the Florida Today newspaper they've lost about $4.5 million just by canceling these events. So there is a huge financial incentive for these events to come back on immediately, as soon as possible. And so what we did was we took a look at, they put out these return to play guidelines on May 1st. And had a couple experts look at it, and also looking through our lens as well at Project Play, where we really try to reimagine youth sports through the core values of health and inclusion, and tried to understand, okay, what are these guidelines saying and how will they be applied? Because there are going to be many, many people across the country using them. And, you know, we raised a lot of questions, including talking to a public health expert at Johns Hopkins University Medicine, just about the lack of specificity on some things, things that were contradicting in one, were said in one sport and weren't applied in another sport. We tried to get the USSSA to, you know, comment and be able to explain some more, and then unfortunately they didn't respond to any requests. But it's big business for organizations like them. You know, I looked at their tax return, and their CEO in 2017 made about $1 million. They bring in about $22 to $25 million each year in annual revenue. So they want to get back up and playing as soon as possible. And public health experts really say that travel sports, when it comes to youth sports, should be the last phase to return. Really, you should be going more with individualized practices first. You know, then, when conditions on the ground are right and public health experts say it's right, then you go to your, like, localized games. But with travel sports, you're mixing people from all across the country, and it's really the same concerns that pro sports and college sports are trying to work through. And there are people in youth sports who are just saying that's okay. We're gonna go ahead with it.
Yeah, ironically, there is a 132 team tournament that is set to take place this weekend. And from everything I'm being told, it is going to happen. And to our knowledge, it is the first tournament that is going to take place in the state of Tennessee. And it is indeed put on by USSSA. And it's ages 7 to 14. Like I said, it's a 132-team tournament. And I've had some parents of mine send some of the guidelines they have put out there. They've already doled out times and fields. So I think it's going to go on. I do think it's going to happen. And like I said, I think this will be a first in our state. And, John, I was just kind of looking over this stuff, and because I'm fully aware how these tournaments work, I'm the head coach. We're in kid pitch. I'm the pitcher. Willie has gone through this with his son. But talking about coaches bringing game balls and Clorox wipes to wipe the baseball down every half inning. Umpires are not allowed to touch baseballs. Players and assistant coaches must retrieve all foul balls, not spectators. It goes on to talk about they encourage people who are watching to wear masks, not to sit on the bleachers, bring your own chair. Look, all these, I could go on and on. All these things are great, John. But I'd like to know, in a 132-team tournament, this is a big – this can be put on over four locations. Who in the world's going to go around and actually, you know, enforce these rules? I mean, to me, it's kind of a give me a break. Who's kidding who? We know darn well that isn't going on. That's nice to put that out there, but who enforces any of that? And what's the penalty if you're not listening?
No, I totally agree. I think a lot of people just don't care, right? And not that they don't care about health. They just feel like it's safe and it's fine, and they believe the benefits outweigh whatever small risk in their mind that there is. And there's still a lot more that we still don't know about the virus. I mean, look, I want kids to be back out playing as soon as possible. I have an 11-year-old son who missed his spring baseball season. I've been a coach in soccer and basketball and baseball. And, I mean, candidly, right now as a volunteer coach, I wouldn't feel comfortable right now yet coaching and being in charge of, you know, 10 to 15 to 20 kids, not knowing all the what I need to know about COVID-19 right now and the training and the guidelines. Because keep in mind, like, these are still kids, right, that they're going to be going out there and they're going to touch things in the course of a game and, you know, interact with an umpire or with a referee in the course of a game or interact with each other and not doing the social distancing that may be needed, because that's what kids do. And we all have to sort of begin to educate ourselves in a new way in order to live with this virus. But that means we actually have to educate ourselves, right? And starting in phased approaches such as smaller practices and, you know, even in school settings. I always had thought, okay, when schools reopen, that's when we'll start seeing youth sports really reopen. But then in the past couple months, it became pretty clear, no, youth sports is going to come back before schools. But schools are at least that environment where you have trained educators, and it's a way to sort of begin to practice what these new habits need to look like. That's more conducive to learn it than in a youth sports setting with, you know, well-intentioned volunteer coaches who just don't necessarily know what they're doing.
I'll tell you what, if they're wiping down the balls after every half inning for four or five games this weekend, let's see, 132 teams, and they've all got the supplies for Clorox wipes to do that, I would just like to know, John, where did they get all those Clorox wipes?
And also, you're going to have some
illegal
pitches.
Where in the world do you find that many Clorox wipes?
If you're pitching, I think you're going to have some serious movement on some of your pitches, like a spitball.
I mean, you got to be kidding me. Like, that's the one thing. That's the one thing on shelves everywhere. There's no wipes. Clorox wipes, where? Where do you get that?
Yeah. I know. You know, and the other thing to think about as well is the officials and the umpires who are part of this, right? These are adults, and I wrote a story about this as well that, you know, sports officials in our country tend to be older. They're more likely to be 60 or older than 30 and under. It's already a very tough profession to find officials. How many of these people are going to want to come back, and are we communicating with them about what they're comfortable with in terms of, like, umpiring? So, for instance, we're starting to see some of these guidelines of home plate umpires moving behind the pitcher, right, and calling balls and strikes that way. And that makes some sense, right, because you're not right behind the catcher. Then I talked to a leader of a national sports officiating organization who said, look, there's a lot of umpires who are not going to be comfortable doing that. A, they just won't like calling balls and strikes that way. And B, now you're right in the line of getting hit, you know, by a line drive. And D, you have the reflexes to get out of the way. So there's so many elements that you have to think about as you return to play.
John Solomon is with us. AspenProjectPlay.org. You can read some of the material that we're talking about today. It's a lot of good material. If you are a coach or a parent of somebody and your team is starting to talk about returning to play, maybe your team is already doing some practicing or thinking about games, maybe signed up for some tournaments here and you're wondering if they're on or not, some things to think about. John, here's one thing that I've thought about a lot, and I think you're getting at this a lot with your writings and what you've said. It's one thing for the guy at the top who's making $1 million to cancel the tournament. But there's some teams that, let's say you've paid $500 to a tournament. well, there's a your organization, your team has paid that money. You have to think about, okay, if we don't go, do I ask for my money back? Can I get it? And then what if the parents ask for their money back? Can I make sure I get it? Like, what if I got to pay out of my pocket? You can see how maybe some of these people are hesitating before they cancel the tournament just because of the financial strain that they're all under, some uncomfortable conversations that would have to be had.
No, no doubt. I mean, look, refunds, I mean, my reporting and just talking anecdotally with people, they don't have exact date on this, but it seems like a lot of organizations are trying to hold off on the refunds, you know, to parents, you know, and to families. And it's more so, okay, if we do cancel a tournament or an event, we'll give you a credit, you know, in the future, or please hold on and we're going to try to return or make it as a donation, because there is a lot of financial challenges. There's no doubt. I mean, there will be youth sports providers that go under, you know, because of this. They're just not going to be able to survive. And part of it, what we want to do at Project Play, we've been, you know, talking about this for several years, and this is a great opportunity to do it now, is reimagining the youth sports model and making it more sustainable and creating cheaper but still quality alternatives for all kids to play. So we're not just so reliant on a travel sports industry that, look, there are many benefits to it. I know there are many kids and families who enjoy it, and the competition and the interaction and the social aspect of it. But there are a lot of kids who get left behind by it as well. And now we're also seeing the pressures of this industry in terms of rushing back perhaps too soon.
John, I've read a lot on your website about that, and I agree a lot. And maybe down the road, we need to have you on again to talk about the model that you guys have, the vision, to try to find the happy median between the travel madness, that I like to call it sometimes, and more the model that we grew up with. You know, if you're 45 and over, you know, where you play in your neighborhood, right? You have that community league that brings a lot of people together and doesn't leave the kids behind earlier. Maybe more people play for longer. There's a lot of great effects to that. It's great stuff. But in the moment here, I would love to hear your thoughts on, you know, especially because of your experience as a dad, as a coach, how do you try to have some of these conversations? There's some tough decisions, I'm sure, that a lot of teams have to make where, you know, maybe two or three parents are saying, well, I may not be comfortable traveling to this tournament, and maybe some of the other people on the team do want to go, and so there may be some peer pressure. Hey, if you don't go, we can't go, so what do we do? Like that, those have to be some pretty difficult conversations at times, and you have to be comfortable to be able to have those.
Yeah. No, look, I mean, I think what's probably happening is that if there's enough kids who are able to play, then the teams are going to play, and those who don't feel comfortable don't. And I think for each parent, it's got to be an individual decision. And if you're a parent and you don't feel comfortable right now, then you're the parent. I mean, you know best. I mean, I would – parents know a lot more about, like, what right and wrong kind of looks like in youth sports, I think, than they give themselves credit for. It's just sometimes you get caught up in – you know, the peer pressure or wanting your child to not, you know, fall behind and, you know, and still be able to do the same thing as other kids. But volunteer coaches are, you know, they're well-intentioned. I'm a volunteer coach, but we're still just volunteer coaches and we don't know everything. And I would say parents to, you know, make their own individual decision about what they're comfortable with.
Based on everybody you've talked to, because you've talked to a lot of experts, do you think there's a pretty distinct difference at this point between gathering, having a practice where, you know, you're with your guys, or maybe even playing another local team, as opposed to traveling, staying in hotels, being around 50 or 60 teams at a complex, et cetera? That, there seems to me to be a pretty distinct difference between those two.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, so first and foremost, I think returning to play is going to look differently depending on the community that you're in, right? What are the local conditions on your ground? And have you gotten sign-offs from a public health expert? That's really important too, right? That you're not just doing this on the fly and maybe just say, well, the governor has opened these up and so now we can play. Well, make sure you're really getting a public health expert to sign off on this, you know, in some way. But I totally agree. It's just the law of numbers, right? And averages, that if you're interacting with more people and from different parts of the country, then of course you're potentially increasing the risk of COVID spread, you know, in your community or within your team or parents.
We're talking to John Solomon. And One thing that is we have this conversation that kind of stands out to me that I guess concerned about, you know, if you're a parent and you decide that you don't feel like it's safe for your kid to play, or, you know, if the kid expresses that they don't feel safe and they don't play, so they don't, you know, what kind of effects does that have with their standing with the team of, you know, when they do come back, that you've obviously had to play somebody in their place. I think it's unfair to punish somebody just because they decide not to play because they don't think the conditions are safe. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, you would hope that doesn't happen, but I wouldn't be surprised in some places if it does, you know, particularly more competitive, you know, club teams or organizations. Yeah, I mean, if you're not comfortable because of a pandemic and a coach is going to then bench you or think you don't take it seriously enough moving forward, then, you know, maybe you're on the wrong team, you know, in the wrong organization. And maybe that's a pretty good telltale sign that you need to go look somewhere else to play and that people are more understanding. But hopefully that doesn't happen. But, it wouldn't surprise me if it does in some instances.
I know we've been talking youth sports with you, but I am curious of your thoughts of just college football and how all of this is going to affect college football. It's obviously different than pro sports, but there's still a financial aspect to it, just like we've been talking about with youth sports. So what do you think ends up happening on the collegiate front when we get to the fall?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the answer anyone wants to hear, but I don't think anyone knows yet, right? Like, we'll see where this virus goes. I mean, clearly players are going to start returning, you know, and college athletes, you know, here in the next couple of weeks, June 1st, some dates, June 8th, some dates, like the SEC. I think it will depend on, you know, where we are with, you know, the virus, you know, in the spread. Are we having, you know, more cases and more deaths, or are we starting to, you know, continue to decline? You know, one thing that really stands out to me is the, at least on paper, what looks like a difference in terms of testing, you know, of college athletes versus pro athletes. So on the one hand, the NHL is talking about, hey, when we bring these players back, they're going to be tested daily. And that probably is the right approach or close to the right approach that you may need to test that often in order to continue to be playing these sports for multiple months, assuming we have enough testing for the rest of the country at that point. We don't want to take tests away from healthcare workers and people who are sick, people who really need it, and give it to NHL hockey players or college athletes. Whereas college sports is talking about, you know, testing maybe once when they come or every so often, but it sounds like a lot less and not very regularly, and sometimes only if symptoms appear. It's going to be interesting is, will there be pressure from, like, college athletes that they put on themselves, or maybe they just feel within their team, of not even admitting symptoms in order to get tested because, you know, they want to keep playing or they don't want their team to be shut down and have to forfeit. There's going to be a lot of, you know, interesting dynamics and questions associated with it. But the pro sports angle is taking a much more aggressive approach to testing, it seems like, than college.
John, appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Continue to be safe, you and your family, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is John Solomon with Aspen Sports. The website is the Aspen Institute. We'll continue to talk about what we just discussed with John on the other side of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.